week four of our Letting Go series. And today, the title is Letting Go of the Past. Yeah, it's a tough one. It can be a hard one, right? And I want to start with, I feel like I say this every week, one of my favorite stories, but you go through the Bible and there's all these stories and there's just so much wisdom in these stories, and you sit with them and they just do something to you, and you read them and there's like layer after layer, you keep peeling back all the layers and you look at it, you know, one time and you see a piece of the story, but then you come back and you revisit that story a couple years later and you see something that you hadn't seen before, and it's every story, it's like a prism. You can read it five times and you can see five or more different truths that are hidden in the story. And so this is one that I've known this story for years, and every time it's almost like I peel back another layer to the story. That's the beauty about the Bible. You can read it and it just keeps taking you deeper and deeper. And so this is one of my favorite stories of the Bible. And it's found in the book of John. And this is actually a post-resurrection story. And I know we're not supposed to do post-resurrection before resurrection. So I'm going to cheat a little bit here, and we'll talk about a post-resurrection story before we even get to the death and the resurrection. Is that okay? Are we all right with that? Okay. If not, then I guess we could just go home. But no, we can't do that, because there's just too much here for us to talk about this morning. Now, this is John, I believe John chapter 20. And begins in verse 11. And let me set the stage here. It's a couple of third morning, after Jesus was put in the tomb, after Jesus had died on the cross, and a whole bunch of disciples went to the tomb where Jesus was. Can we see if they can turn that vacuum off? Because I just don't want that hum in the back of my head. A whole bunch of disciples went to the tomb, and what John tells us is that the male disciples went and they left. Of course, because they're probably hungry. They need breakfast or something like that. But Mary sticks around. The woman in the story has a little more grit and determination than the men. You ever notice this to be true in life? So here we go, verse 11. Now Mary stood outside the tomb crying. Remember, the men are gone. Mary's here by herself. She's crying because Jesus, he was her mentor. He was her teacher. She had been following him around for years. She had transformed, changed his life, and now he was gone. He had been killed on a cross. And so she's by the tomb weeping. I mean, she's in mourning. She's grieving. Someone that she deeply loved and cared about is no longer physically present. So she stands outside the tomb, which is normal. I mean, this is what many of us do. We'll go by the grave of a loved one. And here she is by herself, and she wept. She bent over to look into the tomb because, another important part of the story, the stone covering the tomb had been rolled away. They looked in, there was no one there. So here she is like, oh my gosh, like what happened to the body? There were two angels in white seated where Jesus' body had been, one at the head and the other at the foot. And so, of course, everyone's thinking, who stole the body? Where did the body go? Jesus had been buried here. There was a body in here a couple days ago. Well, the tomb is open. The stone's rolled away. Someone stole. I mean, this is even worse. This is sacrilegious that someone, like a grave robber, would go into. This is even worse than just simply losing someone. Now, all that remains of them has been tarnished. And so these angels, they ask her, woman, why are you crying? Well, they've taken my Lord away, she said, and I don't know where they've put him. At this, she turned around. She saw Jesus standing there, but she didn't realize it was Jesus. It's an interesting part. She turns around, sees Jesus, and then kind of looks back in the tomb. Like, huh, all right. We keep going. So we asked her. Now Jesus says, woman, why are you crying? Who is it you're looking for? Now thinking he was the gardener. I mean, there's so many details to this story. She said, sir, if you've carried him away, tell me where you've put him and I will go and I'll do anything I can because I love this Jesus. There's something about his life. Please tell me and I'll go return the body to where it belongs so he can rest in peace. And so Jesus then said to her, Mary. One word. He calls her by name. Mary. So she turned toward him and cried out. So the whole time she was facing the other way Then she hears her name being called by this so-called gardener. And then she's excited, and she cried out in Aramaic, Rabboni, which means teacher. I guess when you get really excited, you speak in Aramaic. Don't know where that comes from. Detail John has to make sure to let us know. So Rabboni, and so Jesus says, do not hold on to me, for I have not yet ascended to the Father. Go instead to my brothers and tell them, I am ascending to my Father and your Father, to my God and your God. So Jesus is saying, hey, don't hold on to me. Don't stay here. Rather, go back and tell all the disciples that have already left, that are at Cracker Barrel having breakfast, go and tell all of them that I have risen. And so Mary Magdalene went to the disciples with the news, I have seen the Lord, and she told them that he had said these things to her. So she listens. She doesn't just wait around, rather she runs and she I've seen the Lord. This is a new day. Now, we need a little bit of background on Mary in order to understand exactly what's happening here in the story. So let's fill in a couple of the details with another gospel account, the Gospel of Luke. And in Luke chapter 8, here's what Luke says about Mary. After this, Jesus traveled about from one town and village to another, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom of God. Now the 12 were with him, and also some women who had been cured of evil spirits and diseases. Mary, called Magdalene, from whom seven demons had come out. All right, so we could have multiple sermons about that one line right there, and I know it brings up all sorts of questions. Let's set all those questions to the side, and let's simply just say Mary's been healed of something. Something had been afflicting Mary, and Jesus healed her. She found peace. Jesus brought peace and calmness into her life. And then we're told a few more of the women in the last sentence, these women were helping to support them out of their own means. Mary Magdalene has been healed. We don't know how long she'd been afflicted, but that's gone. Jesus has transformed her life, and now she's bankrolling the ministry. So she is now financially supporting Jesus and his work of going around preaching the kingdom of God. Think about this. In order to go from someone who has seven demons to now someone who is financially supporting a rabbi who is traveling around the region, think about how much transformation must have happened in her life. I mean, think about your bank account. My guess is you don't lightly give from your bank account. You give to a cause only if you believe in that cause. Only if you believe that it's an actual worthy cause. So Mary obviously believes that what Jesus is doing, it's a worthy cause. Why? Well, because she has experienced the transformation that Christ brings herself. She has experienced new life, which if I were to poll you sitting here this morning, my guess is many of you have come to experience a greater peace. Many of you have met Jesus, the resurrected Christ, and you can't explain it necessarily. There's not a Bible verse. Maybe you do have a favorite Bible verse, but you can't just simply quote a Bible verse and say, well, yeah, there's an experience, something that has happened in your life, and it's caused you to walk a particular way in life. It's caused you to maybe believe certain things. Maybe it's caused you to support different causes, all for the sake of extending the peace and the grace that you yourself have experienced. So Mary has a history with Jesus. She dropped everything in her life to follow Jesus. So of course she is going to stand by the tomb and weep and wonder what happened to the body. Of course she is going to want to hold on to Jesus. She's going to want to give Jesus a hug, right? I mean, think about if someone that you love and cared about had died, and then all of a sudden you see their body, what's the first thing you're going to do? You're going to want to run up and give them a hug. Is that not true? Regardless of if COVID is here or not, it doesn't matter. You would put all that to the side because here's the person in flesh and blood that you deeply, deeply love. And what's Jesus' first response to her? Don't hold on to me. Other translations say, don't cling to me. This is an odd response, is it not? You would think that Jesus would say, great, give me a hug. See, because what Mary wants, what Mary thinks, is that everything is going to go back to how it was before. Mary's expecting Jesus is back. let's go down to the local pub, we'll get everyone together, and we'll start doing our thing again. We'll gather everyone around, and everything is going to be how it was before. And essentially, what Jesus is saying is, it's not going to be how it was before. Things have changed. Things are different. Things are better than how they were before. Now, I remember, probably about 11 years ago, I was working as a youth pastor at a church in Armonk, and I had this vision for Awaken, and I started telling people, hey, this is what I want to do. I want to start a church. I felt like my time in youth ministry was done, it was ending, and I was ready for the next step on my journey. So in the beginning, I sort of split time. I was still working part-time as a youth pastor and then working part-time starting Awaken. I remember I had this internal struggle throughout that entire year where I had been working with some of these kids for years. And I love these kids. I mean, there's something that happens. We would go probably on 3, 4, 5 different retreats, overnight retreats, a couple of weekends a year. We'd go on week-long trips. There's something that happens when you bond with people that you spend that much time with. So every Wednesday night, every Friday night, I was there working with the youth group, working with one of my good friends, John Munsinger, and some of the other adult volunteers. I mean, me and John, we would get dinner together every single Wednesday and Friday night. It was great. We'd go down to the pizza shop. We'd have dinner. We used to play hockey together before youth group. I mean, this was our thing. We'd play hockey, get pizza, have youth group, hang out with the kids. We would have these weekend retreats, go away for a week here and there. So I loved what I did. And so I had this internal struggle where I loved being with the youth of the church, but I also felt being pulled in a different direction. But I wasn't really ready to, I didn't really want to let it go because I was having so much fun in this one season. I didn't know if I really wanted to jump into the next season. One of the main reasons was, well, I didn't want to just abandon the kids. I didn't want to just leave them. I wanted to make sure that they were in good hands, that someone else was going to shepherd them and take care of them. So we had, with the youth group, we went on a week-long trip to Johnstown, Pennsylvania. And if you go on a missions trip with youth group, it's not like you're staying at a 5-star resort. cereal in cardboard boxes every morning. You're talking like grade F sandwich meat every single day for lunch. Maybe peanut butter and jelly if you're lucky. Dinner was, I don't even know what was cooked for dinner. You're sleeping on a sleeping bag on a hard floor. You're really not getting much sleep because you're packed into a room with 30, 40 high school, middle school students. So you can just imagine what the smell of the room was like. And I remember being there that week, like, oh, I'm so done with this externally, but yet internally I was still struggling with it. Then at the end of the week, we were driving back home to New York, and what we do every single time after we had a trip, we would do what we call a debrief. And we would just talk about the week. What did you learn? What did you experience? Where did God show up in the week? What are you going to bring home with you? We would ask all these questions. So we were doing this debriefing. We were sitting on a hill overlooking Interstate 80. Somewhere in the middle of Pennsylvania, we were staying at a hotel, some Howard Johnson somewhere, and here we were just talking about our trip. Now, for the previous 7 or 8 years, I led this discussion. I'd be the one asking questions, following up, but I decided that I wasn't going to lead this discussion. I was going to actually have the next youth pastor, this other part-timer who came in, who was going to take over after me, I was going to have him lead the discussion. So he was there leading the discussion. All the kids were sitting on the hill, and I kind of stepped back a little bit. And I had this moment where something just sort of dropped in my spirit. And it's like I heard this, it's okay to take the next step. The kids are going to be fine. They're in good hands. And I watched this other youth pastor, a great guy, and I just watched him do his thing. And I was like, all right, they're going to be okay. And I felt at that point, I was able to just let go. I felt like, all right, it's time to move into the next season of life. I mean, moving on into the next season, it can be difficult. It can be hard. Sometimes we love a season in life. We're having so much fun. And yet, we feel like we're being pulled in a different direction, or we're being forced into a different direction, into a different season, because not every season is one of our choosing. And letting go of the thing that we love, the season that we had so much fun in, it can be difficult. So I think for Mary, she had all these expectations of, well, this is what life was like before Jesus, and now Jesus is saying, hey, that season has come and it's gone. It did its thing. It was great. It was perfect for that time in life, but now it's time for you to move on to the next season. Now, one of the reasons I think we have difficulty moving into the next season of life is because, and I have a slide for this one. Let's see. Oh, keep going. Let's go one more. There we go. Who knows this song by Bruce Springsteen? Yes. The song Glory Days. Who wants to sing it for us? No takers? So, Carl, Carl's going to come up. Okay. He'll do an encore later for us. Here's the third verse of this song. I'm not going to sing it. I'll just say it. So I think I'm going to go down to the well tonight. I'm going to drink till I get my fill. And I hope when I get old, I don't sit around thinking about it. But I probably will. The first two verses were about people that he knew earlier in life. And they were talking about their previous life. The glory days when things were great and when everything was perfect. And so here he is. He says, you know what? I hope I don't do that as well. But I probably will. Just sitting back trying to recapture. You ever been there before? You're at the well, getting a couple of drinks, and you're with an old friend maybe, or you're telling stories about high school or college. You ever use that phrase? Those were the days, right? We use this, if only I could go back there and capture the spirit, a little of the glory. Well, time slips away, and it leaves you with nothing, mister, but boring stories of glory days. See, sometimes we can live in the past. We can live in an old season because it reminds us of the glory days. We think about our time here and now. We look at what's in front of us, some of the challenges that we're facing, and sometimes they can be really, really difficult, and we don't want to face those challenges. They seem just like they're too big for us, and we think, oh, if only I could get back to those days. If only if I could go back to how it was before, then I would be happy. Then I would be filled with more. The reason why I'm not filled with joy and happiness right now is because it's not like it was before. I think what Mary was hoping for initially is that Jesus would reinstate the glory days. He would bring it back to how it was before. But here's the problem with the glory days. First, let me start with a little parenting advice that I was given right when Reese was born. I remember I was doing yoga one morning. I used to do yoga on Tuesday mornings. And there was a woman who I did yoga with, probably in her 70s. The spirit of this woman, utterly amazing, amazing. And we would talk every single Tuesday after we would do yoga together. And she would always ask, you know, how's your wife? How are the kids? Or at that point, we had one kid. So how is your son? And he wasn't sleeping for a while, which not too much has changed. He's a little better now. But I was just telling her, and I was like, oh, my goodness. I just wish he would get more sleep. So she gave me this advice. She said, okay, well, here's what you need to know. And she had had twins in life. And she said, here's what you need to know. If you don't like this current season, don't worry about it because another season is around the corner. She said, every season moves quickly in life. And so you have to realize if you don't like the one season, don't worry about it because something new is going to come. I mean, this is true. I mean, I found this with kids. I mean, you turn around and you realize, oh my gosh, like look how big they are already. But this is true with life in general. Seasons come and go so, so quickly. And sometimes we're trying to live in a past season and we're not ready and open to embrace the current season in life. And I think some of the reason why is because of a lack of imagination. Or it's a lack of trust. It's a lack of trust that this current season or the next season could possibly be better than what came before. Sometimes we're having so much fun in a season, we're loving the season, that we dread that things would ever change, and it's this lack of trust that what could come next could possibly be better, because we can't even imagine that anything could be better than how it is today. So rather than being open to what's in front of us, we kind of close ourselves off because, well, no, I could never imagine that things could be better than how they used to be. I mean, this is why we tell stories and try to recapture the spirit of glory days, because we think those were the best times. But essentially what happens when we try to recapture a spirit and wish that we could get back there is we close ourselves off to the joy and the beauty of the season that's currently in front of you. So we need to open our hands, open our eyes to see, okay, what's in front of me right now? Where's the joy in this season? Where's the joy in what's right there in front of me, and how can I embrace it so that then in 15 years from now, I can look back and say, ooh, that was a season. See, for Mary, she was thinking about all the good times that she had with Jesus. And it's natural that she would want to hold on to Jesus, that she would want him to be there with her through this next season in life. But Jesus is like, no, you know what? I have some work to do. There's some things that I haven't done yet. And there's some things that you haven't done yet. There's some work for you to do in this current season. And I think this is true for all of us. There's something for all of us. There's some type of work, a calling for all of us in this particular season of life that we're in. There's a passion for you to throw yourself in. There's some help for you to give to others. Maybe it's a season of taking care of yourself. Whatever the season happens to be, when you're holding on to the past, you're not able to do the work that is before you in this season. To live into what's right there in front of you right now. Jesus is like, hey, I need you to go back and tell the guys, because they've already left. I need you to go and tell them that I have resurrected. And what does Mary do? She obeys, because she has learned to trust Jesus through the previous seasons. And now there she is running to tell the other disciples, hey, I have seen the Lord. Now, I think there's another reason. That's the positive reason, I guess you could say, why we don't embrace the current, why we don't let go of the past, because of how good it used to be. But then let's flip it a bit. I think another reason why we hold on to our past is because of where we've been in life. And sometimes we can feel a bit of shame over where we've been. We look at the debris that's littered in our past and we say, man, look at where I've been. I can't hold on to that because it's too painful. It's become my identity. See, for Mary, remember, she had been healed of 7 demons. In other words, Mary has some sort of a past. We're not told exactly what the past was. All we know is that she was carrying some baggage. There's some things that she's been carrying on her shoulders for years. That's true for all of us. We all have weights from our past that we carry around with us. Jesus had healed her of this before. Now, when Mary sees Jesus, maybe she's thinking, I can't go on without you. I can't do this on my own. There's no way I can move forward because I need you. I need your presence to constantly bring healing. I need your physical presence to constantly bring some healing to my life. Look at all that I had before. I need you with me to make sure that I don't return to that. So she's not believing in herself. She's not believing that she can go and live out this life that Jesus is calling her to live out. And that, what does Jesus do? He calls her by her name, Mary. One word, Mary. It's like he's just reminding her of the worth and the value that she has. She's thinking, I need you to be there with me every step of the way. Because you've helped me let go of what I've been through in life. And Jesus just, with one word, one whisper, Mary. In other words, he's saying, you got this. I believe in you. You're going to be okay. You've been with me. You've traveled with me. You've seen the grace and forgiveness that's been true for you in your life. You've seen how others have experienced the grace and the forgiveness and how they've been able to let go. Now it's time for you to fly on your own. It's time for you to go and proclaim this. Yes, I won't be with you bodily. I won't be with you in flesh and blood, but my spirit will be with you. My spirit will be there guiding you, leading you every step. My spirit of grace and forgiveness will always be there with you. With just one simple word, Mary, he's instilling this immense worth and value in her. It's like she doesn't need anything else after this. She hears her name. Remember, up till this point, what was she being called? Woman. Woman. But just think about when someone remembers your name. I mean, that's why we make such a big deal about trying to remember names here at Awaken. You're a visitor, you come back, and someone remembers your name. I mean, how does it make you feel? Like you're valued, like you're worth something. Think about you're having a conversation with someone. And I get it. Sometimes we, like, okay, all right. But sometimes we don't remember names. It can be hard. But if you're having a conversation with someone and someone calls you by your name, you kind of sit up a little bit more, a little straighter, right? Or if the barista at Starbucks, you remember, I mentioned John Munsinger before. He remembers every single person's name. He makes it a point to always remember their name. And here's one of the things that I've learned from him. People truly respect and they value the fact that John always remembers their name. I can see people light up when he calls them by name. People want to be around him. This is what's happening here. Woman, 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 Mary. Value and worth. I believe in you. I believe in you. Now, I handed each of us a little note card. Okay, there's only three hammers. We're okay. So I handed everyone a note card. We have a pen. What I would like us to do this morning is I want us to think about, is there anything that we are holding on to in our past? Maybe it's a glory day story. Something that we look back and say, oh, if only I could recapture that. And we're so focused on that story and that time in life that we're closed off to the good of this season. Or maybe it's some debris, some shame from the past, and it's causing you to believe that you could never live out or you could never go and proclaim this message of Jesus. You could never go and bring the message of Jesus through your life to the world around you. If there's anything that you're holding on to, I simply want to invite you to write that down as a way just to acknowledge it. Just to say, yeah, this is something, this is a part of me that I've been holding on to, and it's preventing me from fully throwing myself into this season and the work that I am being called to do in the here and now. I just want you to write that down. You can bring it with you. There's garbages out there somewhere on the way out. You can throw it out. You can bring it home with you when you're ready. Just want to invite you to, maybe you can tear it up if you want. You can burn it if you want. You can put it on in a shredder. Whatever you need to do, this is simply for you. If there's anything that comes to mind that you've been holding on to, just want you to write that down. And then when you're ready, you can let go of it. There's this beautiful verse in the Psalms, Psalm 103. And it says, as far as the east is from the west, so far has he removed our transgressions from us. If there's any shame that you've been carrying with you, the truth that Jesus brings is that it's forgiven. It's forgotten. as Mary was healed, Jesus is proclaiming that same healing over each of us. It doesn't need to hold us down. It doesn't need to be a reason why we can't live into the work that God has for you right now in your life. The work of bringing grace and healing and love to the world. Let me pray here for us.